And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. With me is Phil Connon. How are you doing there, Phil?
Yes, good afternoon, Phil.
Today on the show, we're going to be returning to a topic which we dealt with last week, but this is becoming now a dramatic situation. We will be talking again to Dr. Ruta Singhwa, who was once a chief of staff in the RPF under Paul Kagame, who is presently the president of Rwanda, good friend of Bill Clinton, good friend of Tony Blair, but a man who is increasingly under scrutiny for crimes against his own people, and of course has incarcerated the one woman who challenged him for presidency. She's been in prison now for almost, I guess she has been, a good 12 months in prison. But the news is something that Dr. Ruta Singhwa has had to say, and he said it since we interviewed him last week on this show, which we're going to be getting into in some depth today with Dr. Ruta Singhwa. I'm going to read this statement because he's issued this on October the 1st, only 3 days ago, and it says the following. Paul Kagame killed President Juvenal Habyarimana, President Cyprien Sarimara of Burundi, Deogratias Savimana, Elie Sagatwa, Tadi Bagaragaza, Juvenal Renzaho, Emmanuel Akinyei, Bernard Caesar, Sirac Simbizi, Jackie Hero, Jean-Pierre Minabiri, and Jean-Michel Perrin. On August the 4th, 1993, in Arusha, Tanzania, the government of Rwanda and the Rwandese Patriotic Front signed the Arusha Peace Agreement. The provisions of the agreement included a commitment to principles of the rule of law, democracy, national unity, pluralism, the respect of fundamental freedoms, and the rights of the individual. The agreement further had provisions on power sharing, formation of one and single national army, and a new national gendarmerie from forces of the two warring parties, and a definitive solution to the problem of Rwandan refugees. On April 6, 1994, at 8:25 p.m., the Falcon 50 jet of the President of the Republic of Rwanda, registration number 9XR-NN, on its return from a summit meeting in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, as it was on approach to Kanombe International Airport in Kigali, Rwanda, was shot down. All on board, including President Juvenal Habyarimana, President Cyprien Terimara of Burundi, their entire entourage and flight crew died. The death of President Habyarimana triggered the start of genocide, the targeted Tutsi and Hutu moderates, and the resumption of civil war between RPF and the government of Rwanda. The RPF's sad and false narrative from time to time on has been that Hutu extremists within President Habyarimana's camp shot down the plane to derail the implementation of the Arusha Peace Agreement and to find a pretext to start the genocide in which over 800,000 Rwandans died in at least 100 days. This narrative has become a predominant one in some international circles, among scholars, and in some human rights organizations. The truth must now be told. Paul Kagame, then overall commander of the Rwandese Patriotic Army, the armed wing of the Rwandese Patriotic Front, was personally responsible for shooting down the plane. In July 1994, Paul Kagame himself, with characteristic callousness and much glee, told me that he was responsible for shooting down the plane. Despite public denials, the fact of Kagame's culpability in this crime is also a public secret within RPF and RDF circles. Like many others in the RPF leadership, I enthusiastically sold this deceptive storyline especially to foreigners, who by and large came to believe it, even when I knew that Kagame was the culprit in this crime. The political and social atmosphere during the period from the signing of the Arusha Accords in August 1993 was highly explosive, and the nation was on edge. By killing President Habyarimana, Paul Kagame introduced a wild card in an already fragile ceasefire and dangerous situation. This created a powerful trigger, escalating to a tipping point towards the resumption of the civil war. Genocide and the region-wide destabilization that has devastated the Great Lakes region since then. Paul Kagame has to be immediately brought to account for this crime and its consequences. First, there is absolutely nothing honorable or heroic in reaching an agreement for peace with a partner and then stabbing him in the back. Kagame and Habyarimana did not meet on the battlefield on April 6, 1994. If they had, and one of them or both had died, it would have been tragic, but understandable as a product of the logic of war. President Habyarimana was returning from a peace summit, and by killing him, Kagame demonstrated the highest form of treachery. Second, Kagame, a Tutsi himself, callously gambled away the lives of innocent Tutsis and moderate Hutu who perished in the genocide. While the killing of President Habyarimana, a Hutu, was not a direct result of the genocide, it provided a powerful motivation and trigger to those who organized, mobilized, and executed the genocide against Tutsis and Hutu moderates. Third, by killing President Habyarimana, Kagame permanently derailed the already fragile Arusha peace process in a dangerous pursuit of absolute power in Rwanda. Kagame feared the letter and the spirit of the Arusha peace agreement, as the subsequent turn of events has now shown. Kagame does not believe in the unity of Rwandans, democracy, respect for human rights, and other fundamental freedoms. The rule of law, power sharing, integrated and accountable security institutions with a national character, and resolving the problem of refugees once and for all. This is what the Arusha peace agreement was all about. That is what is lacking in Rwanda today. Last but not least, Kagame's and RPF's false narrative, denials, and deceptions have led to partisan justice in Rwanda and at the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, thereby undermining prospects for justice for all Rwandan people, reconciliation, and healing. The international community has knowingly or unknowingly become an accomplice of Kagame's systematic and shameful game of deception. I was never party to the conspiracy to commit the heinous crime. In fact, I first heard about it on BBC around 1 a.m. on April 7, 1994, while I was in Kampala, where I had been attending the Pan-African Conference. I believe the majority of members of RPF and RPA, civilians and combatants like me, were not party to this murderous conspiracy. That was hatched and organized by Paul Kagame and executed on his orders. Nevertheless, I was a Secretary General of the RPF and a major in the Rebel Army, RPA. It is in this regard, within the context of collective responsibility and a spirit of truth-telling in search of forgiveness and healing, that I would like to say I am deeply sorry about this loss of life and to ask for forgiveness from the families of Juvenal Habyarimana, Cyprian Terimara, Deogracias Sabimana, Elisa Gatwa, Thaddeus Bagragaza, Emmanuel Akingeni, Bernard Siza, Sirak Simbizi, Jackie Herreau, Jean-Pierre Minabiri, and Jean-Michel Perrin. I also ask for forgiveness from all Rwandan people in the hope that we must unanimously and categorically reject murder, treachery, lies, and conspiracy as political weapons, eradicate impunity once and for all, and work together to build a culture of truth-telling, forgiveness, healing, and the rule of law. I ask for forgiveness from the people of Burundi and France, whose leaders and citizens were killed in this crime. Above all, I ask for forgiveness from God for having lied and concealed evil for too long. In freely telling the truth before God and the Rwandan people, I fully understand the risk I have undertaken, given Paul Kagame's legendary vindictiveness and unquenchable thirst for spilling the blood of Rwandans. It is a shared risk the Rwandans bear daily in their quest for freedom and justice for all. Neither power and fame nor gold and silver are the motivation in these matters. For me, in these matters of death that have defined our nation for too long. Truth cannot wait for tomorrow, because the Rwandan nation is very sick and divided and cannot rebuild and heal on lies. All Rwandans urgently need truth today. Our individual and collective search for truth will set us free. When we are free, we can freely forgive each other and begin to live fully and heal at last. Dr. Theogen Rudasingwa, former RPF Secretary General, Ambassador of Rwanda to the United States, and Chief of Staff for President Paul Kagame. That was issued in Washington, D.C., October 1, 2011. We're going to be speaking to the doctor shortly. Also, later in the show, we expect to be talking to the daughter of President Habyarimana, who I know has read this statement, and I'm sure she's going to react to, and I think I'm sure she's very moved by it. I think we're joined by Dr. Rudasingwa. Are you there, sir?
I'm good. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very good. I have to say congratulations to you, and thank you so much for making such a courageous statement and speaking to this very painful issue that has faced your country now for so many years, for you to come forward and to discuss this very candidly is, I think, a great blessing for everybody who's ever cared about what happened to your country.
Yeah, it's a very, very serious matter, and I thank you really for. I didn't know that you read the whole statement on, for the listeners, maybe who didn't have an opportunity to read it, and I think that is part of the tragic story of Rwanda. And but as you know, I'm one who believes, and I'm sure I do share this kind of sentiment that even out of tragedy, sometimes in the long run, something beautiful can emerge out of it. So it's in that spirit that having concealed such a crime for too long and having been part of propagating it, that I kind of feel a liberated man, because it's like I've cast my burdens down, I've let my burdens down, and I feel very free because I've been able to tell the truth.
Yeah, that is so remarkable. This is, and just to clarify for our listeners, or to, for them to know, you are you say in the statement that you actually heard the President Kagame at that time. I guess he was the vice president. He's still a general. Say in your presence that he had made the order. Is that right?
Yes. I say in the statement that with the. He's such a callous man. Maybe you think English might be able to translate for listeners what a callous man is like. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for such a tragic matter and a matter that touches the death of two presidents, of senior members of the government, of two governments, and also French people, but human beings in general. For somebody to talk about the death of such human beings in such callous manner, to me, I have, of course, harbored it in my heart for too long, but I found it very distasteful, even then, to have listened somebody talk about it like that. So, he says it in a very callous manner, and, of course, he said it in the presence of some two other people during that time.
By the way, you address a very important issue, and that, of course, is in all of this tragedy, people have looked for the motives of people. And you say that there was a false theory, or is a false theory, that the act was done by extremist Hutus who wanted to bring on this clash. But in when you speak to the motive of the President Kagame, you say that his motive was that he didn't want to continue with the peace process, which would have meant power sharing. Is that right?
Yeah, to be honest, as you know, this is something that stretches back from 1994. And I've kept on, even then when I was a senior member of government and of the RPF, and even after I left the government, I kept on asking myself, what could have been Kagame's motive? Because in many circles, especially since then, Kagame has really been marketed as a very strategic general, as a wise man, as somebody who is very intelligent. But when you put all these things together, whatever his motivations were, his calculations were like a gamble or like an adventure, because in retrospect, I can see Kagame could not go into the competitive process that was supposed to be the culmination of the Arusha peace process. Because remember, the agreement was signed in August 1993, and we're supposed to go for elections within 22 months. And I think most likely Kagame must have put two together and say, how am I going to fare in that kind of competitive political process? That's number one. Number two is that Kagame's mindset is a mindset actually of a gambler or a serial killer, because a serial killer, until he gets the next victim, has a very aggressive appetite for looking for the next victim. But most importantly, like a poor gambler does not know when to cut down losses. I think essentially Kagame didn't see, or he saw and didn't care, that by killing President Habyarimana, that would be a very powerful trigger in a very, very dangerous process. And that one, some of the first victims could be, and that's what happened, could be the Tutsis, and could also be the Hutu moderates.
Yeah.
And so whatever his motivations were, I think it was a very costly and sad miscalculation.
You know, we've on this program, we have interviewed Mr. Hourigan, a United Nations investigator who came to the conclusion some years back that the President Kagame was responsible, and others. And one of the things they've said is that that was a premeditated act, and the ones who planned it and the ones who carried it out had to know the consequences for the Tutsi people of Rwanda.
Yes.
They had to know.
Kagame had to know that. And you don't need to be particularly intelligent or to be particularly an expert.
That means I qualify.
Know that in the situation of Rwanda, killing President Habyarimana had consequences. Indeed, it was proved right, because once he died, the Tutsis were the victims. And so the whole myth of saying that Kagame, a Tutsi, is the champion of Tutsi is very misplaced. In fact, Kagame does not care about anybody. He does not care about Tutsis. He does not care about Hutus. He does not care about Twas. He simply cares for himself.
And by the way, I mean, as you outlined, in a kind of a diabolical way, it was quite brilliant. It was a sneak attack, and it was vicious in its intention.
Yes.
I mean, you do have to have a certain, there's a type of mind very few have that could carry out such an action.
Yes, and remember, by the way, I think that, as you know, certainly my credentials, I was opposed to the regime of President Habyarimana. Mm-hmm. There are things which I rightly felt that as Rwandans were entitled to, that had begun in the previous regime before President Habyarimana came to power. But we must also give him, President Habyarimana, some credit. Some of the things he did prior to his death, which Kagame cannot even dream of. Can you imagine Kagame signing a peace agreement with even people who are not fighting him on the battlefield? I mean, consider that myself and Kayumba and Gahima and Karegeya were sentenced to 20, 25 years in jail. Consider that Victor Ingabire is in jail and many other people. Mm. I mean, all these people have no other crime than simply to say something is wrong in Rwanda, we need to rectify it, and you are put in jail, or you are killed, or you plan assassination for simply saying that. But President Habyarimana, the late President Habyarimana, had gone an extra mile. Yes, he might have been dragging his feet, but he had gone an extra mile in signing the agreement, in agreeing to implement it, and he actually died coming back from talking to other colleagues to see how to implement it. I cannot postulate or speculate exactly what was on his mind on that fateful night, but that's the night that the president, that Paul Kagame killed him.
Mm. Yeah, it's just amazing. And by the way, your point too in your statement is that you certainly believed, and probably most members of the RPF thought, that they were engaged in a good faith agreement. They didn't know there was going to be this violent interruption of the process.
Absolutely. And by the way, many Rwandans, the RPF members and others, had come to accept that we are now in another mode, and the mode was the implementing of the peace agreement. And there was excitement in Rwanda, I think, among the majority of the Rwandans. There was excitement among the refugees that finally this violent conflict is coming to an end, and coming to an end in such a way that the refugees will return. We have new institutions in the country. We shall have democratic elections. And so it was a difficult process, like a marriage. It's as difficult and exciting as a marriage. But I think it was a hopeful note, and by Kagame introducing the wild card of killing President Habyarimana and the president of Burundi and all the people who were on board on that plane, I think he introduced a very dangerous wild card, and we are still reaping the consequences of that.
Yes. And of course, it's going to continue to unfold, and you've made a remarkable contribution to the process of getting at the truth. And without it, you're not going to have a stable basis, as you point out. The French have toyed with a prosecution of President Kagame, or certainly those involved with him. Can we assume, let me put it this way, can we assume that they will be that various folks will be in touch with you about what you know about this business? Because you are calling for action to be taken.
Yes, I would be surprised if they didn't. But in any case, if they didn't, the French jurisdiction is one possibility. But there is the International Criminal Court, there is the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda. There are other instruments even on the continent in Africa that we can appeal to. But clearly, the point I'm trying to make to Rwandans and to the international community is very basic, that in this day and age, a president who is responsible for having killed two other heads of state, including the president of Rwanda, having killed other members of their entourage, Burundians and French, honestly, Does Rwanda deserve to have a criminal for a president? And my answer is categorical and is an absolute no. That Rwandans do not deserve somebody like that who was killed. Not only, by the way, now we are talking about the issue of killing President Habyarimana and President of Burundi, Cyprien Ntaryamirande, and their colleagues on the plane. Mm-hmm. So there are other crimes that Kagame has committed in Rwanda. He has committed in Congo. That will be another chapter on this show. But for now, we are talking about having killed people in a crime that in other parts of the world should actually have landed Kagame in a jail. So my point is that Kagame should not simply, masquerade around, moving around in expensive planes on taxpayers' money, sleeping in expensive rooms, mm-hmm. and appearing posh and a wise man. I don't know. For those people who would like Kagame to be their president, they can take him. But mm-hmm. I do not think that Rwandans deserve to have a criminal for a president.
Yes. Well, and the world shows great, through the United Nations, they address this matter of heads of state who are assassinated. They anticipate that there will be proper investigations. You have two, in all my years of following this, I keep repeating over and over, two African presidents assassinated in one blow, and there has yet to be an adequate investigation, although Mr. Hourigan of the United Nations did do the preliminaries, and the basis is there. But two African presidents, Africa itself needs to ask, why hasn't this, someone got to the bottom of this?
Yes, and I tell you, we shall leave no stone unturned. It doesn't matter how long it takes, but on this specific matter, as it was on the issue of genocide, and as it is on the issue of people who've died in Rwanda because of Kagame, and people who've died in Congo, but particularly on this high crime that was committed by Kagame, we shall leave no stone unturned until justice is done. It doesn't matter how long it takes. Mm-hmm. It might be in my generation. Hopefully it will be. Mm-hmm. But we are going to make sure that Kagame pays for the sins he has committed.
Yeah. We're speaking to Dr. Rudasingwa. He is the former RPF Secretary General. He was the ambassador of Rwanda to the United States and chief of staff for President Paul Kagame. He has issued a statement on October 1st in Washington, D.C., saying that in his presence he heard Paul Kagame say that he had ordered the shooting down of that plane, which led to the death of two African presidents and plunged Rwanda into war and mayhem and massacre. And I have to say, on this matter of courage, Doctor, you had a colleague, General Nyamwasa, who is now in exile in South Africa. Assassins attempted to kill him in South Africa. So you know who you're dealing with, don't you?
Yes, absolutely. I even smile and laugh about it, but it's no laughing matter. Mm-hmm. Because, as you know, I'm not the first one even to come out charging that Kagame is responsible for the death of President Habyarimana and President Ntaryamira of Burundi. Mm-hmm. Others have said it, but of course, probably I'm the first senior ranking member of RPF, former member of RPF and RPF to come out with this, and certainly mm-hmm. I was at one point very close to Kagame, mm-hmm. and I know for sure that he's a truly, truly very vindictive man, and has created a reputation for being feared, and he has actually boasted that he doesn't care about being loved, and if people can fear him, that is enough. Mm-hmm. And he has always intimidated military officers, generals, and top civilians in the RPF that if you cross him, you die. So by coming out with the truth, I know it is it's a very serious mm-hmm. matter. But of course, I think I feel a great sense of relief that I've come out to tell the truth to the Rwandans. That's what I care most.
Yes.
And if anything happens to me, I won't be the last one or the first one. All these things, I think, call for a certain degree of selflessness, mm-hmm. And it's in that honesty that I am doing it so that hopefully we can encourage others to tell the truth and build on it as a foundation for true reconciliation and peace in our country.
I want to ask you, and again, I congratulate you on being so forthright in it, because certainly all over the world, people who care about this greatly in government and in legal community and all that are very needful of the kind of information and that you've provided and your personal courage. But and I also I think we need to say that you, Dr. Rudasingwa, have taken a stand in. Defending the woman presidential candidate who only her crime was that she had returned to your country and attempted to actually organize a party. I don't think she'd put her name in to run, but she was trying to organize her party, and she has been under arrest, and she's in a pink prison costume with her head shaved when she appears in court. You've taken a stand on in defense of her, have you not?
I have, and for that, Kagame and his people have called me as a Hutu apologetic. They say I speak out for the Hutu. They say I'm a revisionist. They say I'm in bed with the FDLR, even when I've never met any of them. They now, since Saturday, you can't imagine all the kind of insults that I get from Kagame's people. But to me, I consider that to be a badge of honor. And the answer to your question is, if Victor Ingabire is not a freedom fighter, then who is?
Mm-hmm.
Why would simply wanting to go and participate in leading your country be a crime for which you have to be incarcerated in jail on trumped-up charges after now? I make no apologies about that, and it's not only Victor Ingabire. There are others. There is Richard Natwitinga, who has been in jail for over 10 years now. There is Deom Shaidi and many others who are simply in jail for no other crime than attempting to participate in the running of their country. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I wonder, citizens of other countries like Canadians or Americans or the British, and especially for the British and the Americans, whose governments are especially close to President Kagame, whether the citizens understand that these types of things actually happen in a country like Rwanda, that there is a president who is responsible for having committed crime, and it looks like in Rwanda it's when you've committed high crime, when you've been exemplary in being very, very cruel to your own people, that you're raised to the top. Because otherwise, why should Ingabire be in jail and Kagame be the president of Rwanda? Because it should be otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Kagame should be in jail and Victor Ingabire should be the president.
Yes. And incidentally, I guess on the last point, you know, you make an excellent case for the old and legally put together Arusha Accord. I mean, the Arusha Agreement was a good one if a murderer hadn't stepped in the way, right?
Absolutely, because I make the point that Kagame was responsible, and historically, and that's how history should set the record right. And that's part of the problem, is that since 1994, and by the way, the viewers, again, should know that I was part of setting Kagame to the international community. I was the Secretary General, was part and parcel of setting that narrative that it's not RPF, but the Hutu extremists who killed President Habyarimana. And so when you look at the whole thing, it's that narrative that has to change because it's false, because it's based on deception and lies. And so indeed, the Arusha Peace Agreement was really, really, even if you go back and read it, it was the best chance for Rwanda at that time. And so Kagame didn't want it to happen, and he created havoc, and we are reaping the benefits many years later.
So we should, if we could get Arusha minus the criminal, we would have peace.
Indeed, and by the way, it's not it's not too late, because I believe there is going to be a time where Rwanda will not have a criminal as a president. And as part of that process of Rwandans coming together and sitting on the same table, admitting their own faults, their own weaknesses, where we've all gone wrong, Hutus and Tutsis, each time, sometimes we are victims, and the victims of today become perpetrators of crime tomorrow. Perpetrators of crime today become victims tomorrow. I believe that there is a lot of lessons that we should learn from all this. But the problem is, Kagame stands in the way of Rwandans coming together to confront their own past in order to learn from it and not to be hostages to it or slaves to it, but to learn enough lessons for us to look forward and to look forward to a future with hope. But we cannot reach that point because Kagame does not want it. Just as he derailed it in 1994, there is no way that he can be an actor in constructing something like that.
Well, that's a great statement. Dr. Rudasingwa, we are very grateful to talk to you today, and we are very touched by your becoming an important historical witness, and I think that things can only improve as a result of your coming forward. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Bye-bye. And that was Dr. Theogen Rudasingwa, and he is the former RPF Secretary General. He is the former ambassador of Rwanda to the United States, and he's chief of staff for President Paul Kagame. And he issued a statement in Washington, D.C., October the 1st, 2011. And you will know, if you've been listening to the Tate Report over the years, we have been following this. We have talked to former U.N. investigators. We have talked to members of families who were in that plane. We have talked to Colonel Luc Marchal, who was the United Nations commander responsible for the airport and the city of Kigali at the time. And he, of course, had reasoned it out that President Kagame had been responsible for the initiation of the attack on the plane and of the war. And he, by the way, has taken a lot of grief for having the courage. That's the Belgian colonel who says number two to, I should say, I don't know if number two is the proper term. I think he was the associate of General Dallaire. We haven't heard from the general on this, but I would be very interested in his reaction to this statement. But we are going to continue to follow it. I think, as I say, listeners to the Taylor Report, listeners to CIUT, will be aware of all the background of this story. This is just a new and dramatic chapter has been added. I just want to say we're going to be calling in about 10 minutes. We should be speaking to the daughter of Marie Rose, President Habyarimana, who was the target of the assassination that we were just discussing with Dr. Rudasingwa. And oh, I think she's joined us. By golly, are you there, Marie Rose?
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine, thanks.
I think we may have, I hope we didn't catch you off guard. I think we're 5 minutes early in calling you. Is that
no,
okay?
No, it's all right. No, I can talk. I can talk. I'm ready.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
We should just tell our listeners, you are the daughter of President Juvenal Habyarimana, who, together with the president of Burundi, was assassinated on April the 6th, 1994, and others were aboard that plane, including the head of the army, everybody aboard with their lives were lost, and it plunged Rwanda in. Not only were these presidents murdered, but the immediate result was a renewal of fighting between the RPF and the government forces, absent their general, who was murdered in the plane. And, of course, there were, as everyone knows, terrible massacres of civilians. We have just spoken to Dr. Rudasingwa, who served in the United Nations as the Paul Kagame's ambassador. He has told us, affirmed his statement of October the 1st, that in his presence, Paul Kagame happily boasted of ordering the assassination of your father. And he's issued quite a statement. He says that the motive seems to have been that they were afraid of the Arusha peace process, which your father and the others were negotiating. I naturally want to know your reaction to that, to his statement. What did you make of it?
First of all, this is really a very, very good example to salute. Really thank him very much for what he's doing for the people of Rwanda. This is what we already knew. The family, we've always believed that we knew, but we were powerless and silenced. And what Mr. Rudasingwa has just done is of great courage that needs to be really saluted, because this is serving the whole population of Rwanda, the whole people of Rwanda, not only the families. I read the statement. He's asking for forgiveness for the families of the victims, of people who were in the plane. Actually, what it takes in the wounded people of Rwanda is really to tell the truth, and the people have been hurt, and what they need is really to forgive and live in peace. But when you know you're wrongly accused, it's hard to give forgiveness. Mm-hmm. But when a person comes to you telling the truth, you're willing to forgive because you want to move forward. Mm-hmm. So the forgiveness, it's given, and it's mm-hmm. I hope it's going to be an open door for all the people of Rwanda, because really Rwandans need to tell the truth, that mm-hmm. what will lead them to reconciliation, to true reconciliation, because so many lies have been said and so many things are still hidden, and this will, as long as it's not said and the truth is not said, the wounds will not be able to, they will not heal. So I personally, and I know for sure from my also my family, we are people who just want the truth and forgive, because these what happened, you cannot go back and bring back the lies, but we have to move on. And the key element in the in our future for everybody to live in peace and is really to tell the truth and to take this courage. So really this requires a good courage, and really personally I would like to thank him and salute his courage.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. And by the way, it's such a vindication here's someone who, by the way, he says that the peace process that your father was attempting to implement was what was the target of that assassination. And so your father is not only he's vindicated in terms of his goals and what he was attempting to do. He's shown to be acting, he was acting in good faith, and the doctor, mm-hmm. Rudasingwa, is saying that even he and others were hoping that the actual peace process that your father was doing was going to go forward, and it was an act of a murderer, a political assassin, that destroyed it for everyone.
As a chief of state, my father, I know he wanted really to gather all the people of Rwanda to make them feel like they are all equal, and to protect them, and he never. In his life, he never wanted war. Even when the RPF launched war, he looked for all the possible means to stop war and for negotiations. But the result, what happened later, showed the contrary, because there was one part of the two parties who was not honest. But I know, my father, he was really had goodwill of, he believed he believed in those peace, in the peace agreement, because mm-hmm. when you've built a country and you manage to unite it, you don't like you. It's like you build and you finished your work as a your work, and you see somebody wanting to destroy your work. You don't want to destroy your work, and when you know it involves now people's lives, his job as a chief of state was to protect the people. So he really did all the best he can, and he believed in that.
Mm-hmm.
We know what happened,
mm-hmm.
and the person who killed him, considering the situation, all the tensions in the country, he knew all the consequences.
Yes,
and,
that came out. Is it? Dr. Rudasingwa confirmed, of course, that he, Kagame, in taking the act that he did, had to know what was going to happen to the poor
yeah.
civilians and to the
yeah.
people of the country.
Exactly.
So really, a child would know what was going to happen.
Exactly. A child would know. So he doesn't know. It doesn't need take some mathematics or no. Everybody will know. The country had spent 4 years in war, and there was a light for a peaceful solution. That what everybody wanted, and there were many. Many concessions for the opposite part. My father was giving too much to the RPF, like it was like a sacrifice. Like for example, the composition of the army. They had a lot of to have something around 40% of the composition of the army and the ministries
yes.
and everything. He did all the best to give them all the options to facilitate really to bring them to
mm-hmm.
to accept yeah this agreement. But he did all the best to avoid loss of lives and to end this situation of war, because
mm-hmm.
everybody or no one wishes to live in war.
No, but you know, and he made all these efforts, and all he got from that was not only, of course, was he assassinated, but a lot of political grief by people trying to offload responsibility for what occurred there. On your father. But by the way, that gives me a chance. I have to say, our listeners should know, your mother, too, she has suffered so much, but she's had some good news recently. The French government has said they will not agree to remove her, as was requested by the Paul Kagame government, to Rwanda. And also the former foreign minister of your country, Mr. Bichi Mpaka, has been acquitted in the courtroom in Arusha, Tanzania. Your mother must be taking some solace from this. She must be gaining some,
yeah.
I hope, her spirits are rising.
Yeah. It's like because we hope in the victory of the truth. We know the truth will prevail because, like you said, the people who caused these killings, the what happened in Rwanda, are trying to put the blame on powerless people, wounded people, and this is really sadistic. And that my mother is like a victim. They now, since my father was killed, they are taking my mother now as the scapegoat for all the blame, and
mm-hmm.
now, but. Thank God there is justice. We still believe in justice, and thank God there are also people who are fed up with these lies and this injustice and seeing people suffering, because I'm looking for the word sacrifice, like sacrificing people for the interest of high politics. Mm-hmm. But you have to consider that there are lives of people. So now this decision, it's a relief, but it's one step
yes.
of the battle. It's like one battle that is won, mm-hmm. but there's still many things to
yes.
to be clarified. I know he's always wanted for a trial. And
yes.
It's a relief. Yeah, we know for sure that if she goes in Rwanda, there will not be a free trial because, you know, they've been accusing the Rwandan government, the RPF, or I don't know who.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the Rwandan government right now, they prepared a report about the assassination of my father, and they were pointing her as the author of the assassination of her husband. That is how
yes.
statistic, how I don't know how to qualify these.
It's surreal.
And yeah, so that's why people like we know you know like you've done harm, but you come to accuse to the people to the victim that he's the one who
yeah.
did the. But so that's why we really this statement of Mr. Rudasingwa is very important. As a relief, but as also an element, a key element, because the assassination of my father is really a key element in the reconciliation of the Rwandan people, because it's really the trigger of what happened, the big massacres that happened in Rwanda, so and of the genocide.
Mm-hmm.
So if people don't know who did it and why and they will still keep the wound, and for my mother this statement will help,
mm-hmm.
and also we wish really the trial is now the next step. Now that she cannot go to Rwanda, we wish for a trial that is a fair trial.
Mm-hmm.
Where she can be cleared now, because people came to believe there have been so many rumors and
yes.
many fabrications. So like this example, people were believing that she really
yes.
planned the assassination of her husband. If people can believe such things, so they can believe whatever, you can say whatever you want on a person, because you have power, you have the money, and you reduce the person to nothing.
Yes.
So the person doesn't have any right. So now the next step will be for a free trial, and then she can the truth will be set free, and she can live a decent life.
That's very good.
Yeah.
And we now both know that we can call Dr. Rudasingwa as witness number one.
Yes.
Well, congratulations. I feel very good for you and for your mother, and we're going to stay on this story, and we're, of course, posting the statement on our website, taylor-report.com, and we're going to return to this topic many, many times, and we're
okay.
very grateful.
Okay, ma'am. I'm happy, too, but I just want to close this interview with the sentence my father would always tell, that history will judge. We're starting to see little by little the truth. So we know history will judge.
Marie Rose Habimana, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye.